I'm going to call to order the Ways and Means Committee hearing. We don't have a quorum yet, but it is 6:20, so we will start. Representative Nornes, Representative Hackbarth isn't here yet. If you would like to go to the stand and explain your bill, we'll get that one out of the way first. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, you want the long form or the long version?
Well, that or you could start tap dancing.
There isn't a long version. That's my problem.
I know that. If you'll explain your bill to committee, please.
Yes, this was brought to me by some constituents in my district that sell boats and docks and deliver docks and these oversized lifts and again, portable docks. Not only do they sell them, but they install them and also, in some cases, store them. Currently, it's required that they purchase a $15 permit for every trip that they make. And what we're asking now is for that to have an option of a $120 annual permit. It's not a new permit, or it's not a new fee, rather. It's an existing fee that others have been able to utilize. So it's basically using an existing fee system. It just extends it to these businesses that operate and have to haul oversized boat lifts and portable docks. There's some urgency in doing this because, believe it or not, we're in that season right now. So people are buying and needing that kind of equipment because we have a short summer. So people want to get out there as fast as they can. And so they're buying docks, installing them, and so it's kind of their peak season. So
thank you.
And I believe the bill is, if passed, it would be effective after enactment, so hopefully we can keep it moving.
All right, thank you, Representative Nornes. Are there any questions? All right, Representative Nornes, we'll get back to you when we have a quorum. Representative Hackbarth here, so he can take the stand and begin to explain his bill to the committee. Welcome to the committee, Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Apparently, we don't have a quorum yet to move anything.
That's correct.
Okay. I'd like to stick to the provisions of the fiscal note for the Ways and Means Committee, if at all possible. This has to do with some stamp legislation that's in here that removes some regulations and actually saves some money for the DNR if we do that particular issue that's in this bill when it comes to the stamps. And that's really all that is in the fiscal note as far as that's concerned, Madam Chair.
And Representative Hackbarth, the fiscal note shows a $1,000 cost to the Agriculture Department.
Madam Chair, I believe that has something to do with the elk depredation that's in the bill and things that go through the Department of Ag.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions for Representative Hackbarth? Representative Carlson.
I really think we should have kind of from the authors at least a general description of a bill. I know you want to focus on the fiscal part, but so we have somewhat an idea of what the bill contains.
Representative Hackbarth, if you could explain a little more what's in the bill. Representative Carlson, you might want to speak into the microphone, too.
I absolutely can do that, Madam Chair, and I can run through all 65 sections if you like individually, but it is the omnibus Game and Fish Bill that we have just about every year. Most of the provisions are brought to us by the DNR. It's mostly technical changes that they like to see within the area of game and fish. That's really what this is about. I have some other DNR bills that are moving through the process. We're going to hear one of those on the floor today that have ATV and motorcycles and those kinds of things, the recreational vehicles. That was going to be in the McNamara bill today. I also have another bill where that's contained separately. That's also before this committee that we'll be hearing probably in the next few days. But this has to do mostly with game and fish and those kinds of changes. And Representative Carlson, I can go through them individually if you like. There's things in here. The controversial two-line fishing issue is in this bill. There's some things about the spearing northern pike and removing the moratorium on the Cass Lake, where right now you can't spear northerns on Cass Lake, and we're going to remove that so you can spear northerns on Cass Lake. That's another controversial issue. So those are some of the more controversial issues that are in this bill.
Yeah. And Representative Carlson.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I don't think we need to go through all 65 sections, but, you know, all of us on both sides of the aisle will be asked to vote on the bill. And I know the fiscal part is relatively modest, but we're still voting yes or no, so it's a good idea to know what we're voting for or against, if that happens to be the case. So thank you.
Madam Chair and
Representative Hackworth.
Representative Carlson, I think I touched on the most controversial issues were those three items.
Any additional questions for the author? Representative Pawlowski.
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. Representative, can you tell me what the reduction is in the in this bill compared to the previous biennium?
Representative Hackworth.
Madam Chair and Representative Pawlowski, it has to do with the stance and what they the way they're going to do this. And if the DNR was here, I'm not sure if they are. Mr. Meyer was going to be here earlier, and I don't see him here yet. But, oh, here we go.
Members, we do have a quorum, so I'm going to officially call the meeting to order. Mr. Smith will note the roll. And Representative Hackworth, if you'd like to move your bill for consideration by the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move House File 984 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register.
All right. Thank you. Sir, welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
I'm Mike Don Carlos, the Deputy Director of Fish and Wildlife. Madam Chair, members of the committee, this change is minor. Currently, law requires a $2 fee to mail out a pictorial stamp if a hunter requests that. The actual cost, however, of mailing that stamp is more in the order of 75 cents. Our Budget Oversight Committee, this has been an issue with them, and they've recommended that we get that fee in line with the cost. So that's the purpose of this bill, is to just change it so we charge to recover our costs and not make a little bit of money like we have been under current law.
Thank you. Representative Pawlowski.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Deputy Commissioner, thank you. I had asked this question earlier, and I think Representative Biskins had agreed with me to continue with the quest to see the number of jobs created and the number of jobs lost as we balance the budget. Do we have any job loss as a result of this bill?
Representative Hackworth.
State employees.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Pawlowski. Not that I know of. I haven't heard of anything, and the DNR has not informed me of that issue either.
Madam Chair.
Representative Pawlowski.
Madam Chair, Representative Hackworth, do we have any jobs created?
Representative Hackworth.
Madam Chair, if you look at the fiscal note, I don't see any full-time equivalents here added or subtracted.
Madam Chair, I appreciate the author pointing to the fiscal note. I'm trying to make sure that we get this for the public record. Sometimes the public does not get access to the fiscal note. Thank you.
Any additional questions of the bill author? Representative Kahn.
Yes. Madam Chairman and Representative Hackworth, I noticed one of the parts in this bill deals with bear hunters.
Representative Kahn, if you could let the committee know what section.
Okay,
of the bill.
18, section 42.
Representative Hackworth.
Yes, Madam Chair, there are sections in here that have to do with bear hunting and bear baiting.
You know, I'm not prepared to offer an amendment tonight, but one of the issues that has come up has been the shooting of radio-collared bear and the failure of the department to issue a warning to hunters who are hunting bears in the region where people are doing research on bears for radio-collared bears. Is that an issue that anyone has been discussing or that you've been thinking about? I'll ask the department and the author.
Representative
Hackworth. Madam Chair and Representative Kahn, no, I have not thought about it. Maybe the department has, but I have not.
Mr. Don Carlos.
Madam Chair and Representative Kahn, we have talked about this. We think that It's not necessary to make it illegal and criminalize bear hunters making a mistake. We have for a number of years asked bear hunters not to shoot radio collared bears, and we continue to do that. And we have in the past on occasion done mailings in certain areas to all licensed bear hunters, which we'll be considering doing again this year.
Well, Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think there's any proposal to criminalize it and so forth, but there has been a bill introduced to look at putting in statute the notification, because, for example, I believe in 2009, a notification was sent out and no bears were killed. In 2010, a notification was not sent out, and there was at least one, maybe more, radio collared research bears. And I have a stack of, I don't know, we were trying to divide it out into legislative districts, but I have a stack of correspondence about this thick on this issue, not only from the state, but actually from around the world. And there are a lot of people concerned about this. I'm sorry that I wasn't able to get a hearing in committee. But the point of an amendment that may be offered on the floor would be specifically to just put in statute the requirement to notify hunters and to ask them not to criminalize it, but to ask them to. And would you see any problem with doing that if you say you're doing it already?
Mr. Don Carlo.
Madam Chairman, Representative Kahn, it's been a while since I looked at that bill, but my recollection is that bill would require all bear hunters to formally acknowledge somehow to DNR that they had been provided with information, and so would presumably make people who forget or miss it or whatever vulnerable to a penalty under the law that they're not right now. I don't recall that the bill simply requires DNR to notify them. It also required, I believe, bear hunters to formally acknowledge to DNR that they had received that information. And that could be a problem.
Well, Representative Kahn.
Chairman, I don't think the word formally is in there. I know it was originally written to send a letter acknowledging it, and it was decided that that might be a burden. We'll point out that Representative Dill is a co-author of the bill, and I think if we offer an amendment, he'll be a co-author. And what we did specifically look at fixing that acknowledgement language so that it could be anything that the commissioner decided. So if the commissioner, you know, decided that it was optional, if the commissioner, we thought it could just be a phone call or an email or anything like that, that there would be no. But, I mean, the hunter doesn't kind of forget to carry their license, I assume, and things like that. But I think that the acknowledgement was in a form decided by the commissioner. So the commissioner could be a question at, can't think of all the ways, but I just wanted to kind of give advance warning and say that we're looking at that.
Thank you, Representative Kahn. Are there any additional questions on House File 984? Seeing none, Representative Hackbarth, would you like to renew your motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd renew my motion that House File 984 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
No.
The motion passes.
Thank you
very much, Representative Hackbarth. Representative Kiefer for House File 650.
Madam Chair, I'd like
Representative McNamara.
I'd like to move her bill.
Representative McNamara moves House File 650. We recommend to pass and referred to the Committee on Government Operations.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This bill is a good, strong bipartisan support. It's a simple bill that will hopefully potentially save some lives. It just is asking us to have more education on carbon monoxide poisoning, and especially its characteristics. It's a very deadly gas, particularly when we talk about the cold Minnesota weather up here. So I'm happy to answer any questions if anyone has some. It's been through the Transportation Committee actually twice. It's in an omnibus and it's a standalone.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions for the bill author? Representative Slawick.
Madam Chair, Representative Kiefer, first of all, I want to speak in support of the bill. I think this is a really good bill, and I'm glad that you brought it forward. We know that this bill is a result of a tragedy that happened in Woodbury, And I do, if it's okay, I'd like to acknowledge that the parents are in the audience. And, you know, whenever we have difficult things happen, hopefully there's some good that can come out of this. I want to support it. I know we've talked about the $44,000 cost. I wondered if you could just explain kind of how that's going to be covered.
Representative
Tucker? Maybe I talked with Chair Holberg about that, about the cost to the bill.
Yeah, it's my understanding that it's part of the special revenue fund in Department of Public Safety, and that they'll assume the cost as a part of doing business for issuing driver's licenses and training materials. If anybody would like to correct me in the audience or the author. That's cost. My understanding. And if Mrs. Labors, if you wanted to come down, I had spoke with you this morning. If you wanted to come down for a brief statement, that's certainly up to you, if you'd like. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, all of you. I'm Kelly Labors, and I'm here with my husband, Jeff. And we appreciate you taking a look at this bill. We really feel like it will save lives. If you have any questions in particular.
All right. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Kiefer, thank you. And ma'am, thank you for being here. I chief authored a bill a few years ago after our family was touched by carbon monoxide. And I will tell you, as hard as it is for you and I, I will tell you, these bills save lives. They have already saved lives. And us doing this bill, even though it tragically touched your family, it will help others in the future. And this state's been a leader, and I appreciate you be willing to come here and be part of that, because it's the right thing. And I hope everybody will vote yes on the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any questions or additional comments? If not...
Madam Chair, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 650 be passed and be referred to, I think it was, Government Operations.
That's correct. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, members.
Thank you very much. Representative Kiefer, you ready to do your next one as well?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Welcome to the committee. Representative Gunther moves House File 1362 for consideration by the committee.
This bill is coming on recommendation from the Work Comp Advisory Board. It has support from both the Chamber of Commerce and the AFL-CIO. It's a reform for dispute resolution. It will hopefully shorten the length of time that it takes for disputes to be resolved for workers' comp claims. So it should get our workers the care they need in a more timely fashion and hopefully save money in the long run because of that. The bill also does a little bit of housekeeping and some language cleanup. And, oh, at this time, Madam Chair, I would like to move an amendment to A5.
Representative Kiefer, we will get Representative Gunther to move the A5 amendment, and if you'd like to explain the need for that.
It's simply matching the Senate language, moving, just upping a little bit of the amount from $60,000 to $75,000, obviously on page 6, line 32. It's just increasing the coverage under the work comp policies.
All right. Are there any questions on the A5 amendment? Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Representative Kiefer, could you tell us the reason why we're going to up the coverage by $15,000? What was the compelling rationale for doing so?
Madam Chair, can I ask John Rakowski or... one of the judges. I think it has to do with remodeling costs. Yes. Okay. It's to provide enough funding if an injured worker needs some serious renovation done in their home, if they need countertops changed, plumbing fixtures changed, ramps built. This is just giving it a little more of an accurate amount of money that might be needed. It hadn't been adjusted in a while.
Representative Piskins, would you like a little more clarification from the department representative?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I will from the department prior to this bill being heard on the House floor, because you know, I don't understand yet why $60,000 is not enough and $75,000 is now the new magic number.
All right. Are there any other questions on the A5 amendment? Seeing none, Representative Gunther renews the A5 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The A5 amendment is adopted. We do have the bill now, I believe, the shape the author would like. Are there any additional questions, comments, concerns?
Madam Chair, just a...
Representative Carlson.
A quick question. The author and her testimony indicated that the timeline would be greatly improved. And I know on in the past when we've dealt with workers' comp, that has been an issue. And I was just trying to look at the bill in the summary. What would be the change there? How long does it typically take currently? And when you say it would be faster, what's happening?
The average... Oh, Madam
Representative Kiefer.
Sorry. The average time is about 245 days. And this bill is actually going to cap it at, I believe, 180 days. Okay. Yep.
Representative Carl.
So, oh, I'm sorry. I just wanted to just illustrate. I mean, right now, the average is at 245. We're moving that whole range down, so the cap is at 180. So it should help a lot.
That answers the question. Right. Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional questions? Seeing none, Representative Gunther.
Be sent to
the general register.
As amended. Yep.
Thank you, gentlemen. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
Thank you, members.
Thank you. The next bill on our calendar, let's, Representative Nornes, you were able to explain your bill already. It's probably not necessary for you to go to the stand. He started out the meeting when we had we were a little short members here. If you want to just briefly explain your bill again.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. It's very brief. It simply allows the Minnesota Department of Transportation to issue an annual permit for hauling oversized watercraft structures like boat lifts and portable docks. The fee is $120 per year, and there's some urgency in getting it done because we're into that season right now, and they'd like to start to be able to buy that permit as spring has arrived and fishing is next weekend and vacations and better weather.
All right.
Go on and on. So.
All right. Thank you. Representative Nornes, are there any questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Westrom.
Representative Nornes, a yes vote brings better weather, a no vote doesn't?
Representative Nornes.
That could happen, yes.
All right. Any additional questions? Seeing none, Representative Nornes renews his motion that Senate File 67 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The bill is on its way to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Nornes. The next bill, House File 174, is Representative Pepin's. There's been a medical emergency in her family. She is unable to be here this evening. She has asked that Representative Downey present her bill to the committee. Welcome to the committee, Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 174 to pass and be re-referred to the General Register.
Thank you.
And, Madam Chair, I do have a couple of amendments. Would you like to have those up front as author's amendments?
Certainly. Let's start with the A4 amendment. This is a recommendation by Mr. Marks.
I'll defer to Mr. Marks to provide a description of why we need this.
Representative, Mr. Marks.
Madam Chair, members, the A4 amendment is simply to clarify that the appropriations in this bill are duplicates of appropriations that were in the state government finance bill. And in the case that they would both get enacted. This is to say they only occur once. This also, for budget resolution purposes, means we count the spending only once rather than dealing with it twice.
Any questions on the A4 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The A4 amendment is adopted. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could I also move the A3 amendment?
Certainly.
And, Madam Chair, if I could, before I just briefly mention what the A3 encompasses, I need to also, if I could, offer an oral amendment to the A3, which would be to strike line 1.2 of the A3 amendment. That was as we were drafting the bill and moving fast, an oversight on my part, that we actually don't need to strike that particular term. The relevant portion is on 1.3, 1.4, and 1.5 of the A3 amendment.
All right. Members, I think we'll just let Representative Downey incorporate that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, the A3 amendment is really just a semantic terminology change that actually ends up being fairly important to make sure that the vendor who would be brought in to help with the compliance activities wouldn't be compensated on a percentage of taxes assessed or collected. It's a minor change to the language, but actually fairly meaningful in terms of kind of the risk and the approach of different types of vendors. So I'd recommend this terminology change and move the A3.
Are there any questions on the A3 amendment as amended? Representative Kahn.
Yeah, I have some. This looks like this would be a performance payment. Why wouldn't we want to do that?
Representative Downey.
Madam Chair and Representative Kahn, actually we do. There is a certain type of performance arrangement where the contingency is based on a percentage of the assessed taxes of the target or a percentage of the actual amounts collected that creates some problems out in the known vendor world. And so we're saying you can have a contingent contract or a success fee contract, but not as a percentage of the assessed taxes or the taxes collected. You drive to some very large amounts and fairly high-risk environments in this case.
Representative Kahn.
So how could you do a compensation based on performance that wouldn't include this?
Representative Downey.
Madam Chair, Representative Kahn, you could do it as a success fee based on the amount collected above and beyond what had been originally submitted. You could do it on an hourly basis. You could do it on a flat fee per $1,000. You could do it a lot of different ways. The percentage on the taxes assessed and the overall tax collected amount creates a circumstance that many call bounty hunting that I think is what we're trying to avoid here.
Representative Kahn.
Madam Chairman, I thought the point of this was bounty hunting. But that's exactly, we're trying to get more money out of people. We're hiring some people to do it. And why wouldn't we pay them on their successfulness in doing it?
Representative Downey.
That's what all of tax compliance, when we write a bill and we say we're putting this much money in tax and compliance, and we, I don't have so much of a problem if we're paying people in the revenue department. But if we're contracting outside and we get less money than when we were doing it in the revenue department itself, how are we ever going to do that?
Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kahn, a good question. First of all, I don't think the purpose of this bill is bounty hunting. I think the purpose of this bill and all of our tax compliance activities is just to make sure that people fairly pay the taxes owed. So just maybe a semantic difference. But suffice it to say that the vendors in this field can very easily and successfully structure contingent fee arrangements. In this particular case, where you drive it as a percentage off of the total taxes assessed and or the total taxes collected, as compared to the increment that the vendor successfully produces, you run into problems. And so we've had a lot of discussion on contingent fee arrangements around a number of different proposals this year, and here's one where we're specifically precluding a certain type of arrangement, which has some definite risks both to the state and to the targets of the compliance audits. And Madam Chair, just to, we have agreement with the chairs of the State Government Finance Committee as well that this exact terminology change will be made into the omnibus finance bill as well.
Representative Kahn.
Thank you. I don't care what you're not doing. Can you tell us what you're doing and give us some language that tells us what you're doing to get that, that concept in?
Representative Downey.
Madam Chair, I think you just probably need to read the section, sections perhaps, but for sure the section starting in line 2.5, subpoint C, that talks about what we are actually doing. And Madam Chair, the hope was that this would be an author's amendment and then I can describe the overall purpose of the bill, which might actually better answer Representative Kahn's question.
Well,
Representative Kahn.
Madam Chairman, I still don't see where I still don't see where you're paying money if this is successful and not paying it if it's not successful. I'm sorry, I'm probably the only person on the committee who doesn't understand. No, but please bear with me a long bit.
Madam Chair.
Representative Downing.
Thank you. A contract may incorporate a vendor financing option, except that it wouldn't be a percentage of taxes assessed or collected. I'm not sure how much more explanation I can provide.
Representative Kahn.
Madam Chair, the point I keep making is instead of telling us what it can't do, just tell us what it can do. And may incorporate a vendor financing option is not, I guess everyone else may be satisfied with it, but it's not sufficient with me. I want to know some specific way that this could be done other than once you've eliminated what looks like the easiest to me, the percentage of the taxes assessed or collected through this process.
Representative Downey.
Madam Chair, a vendor financing option could incorporate all different types of vendor financing and success fee arrangements. We're just precluding one. So I just don't know how to describe the universe other than that it can be a vendor financing option.
How about
Representative Kahn.
Madam Chair, sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representative Kahn. I thought I did in my very first answer. You could offer somebody on an hourly basis. You could offer them a success fee based on the total dollars collected by the state. You just can't offer them a percentage of the total taxes assessed or collected.
Well,
Representative Kahn.
Okay. The hourly basis doesn't make any sense because they could be working for lots and lots of hours and not have any success. The first one that you said.
Representative Kahn, it might help if you talk into your microphone.
Oh, okay. The first one, the first thing that you said might made sense if you incorporated it into your amendment and set it in a way that I at least can understand it. I think I understand it when you say it, but then why can't that be incorporated into the amendment instead of having nothing?
Well, Representative Kahn, the original language that was in the bill stated prohibitions on the type of contract as well.
Yeah, I didn't like that either. So what? But Madam Chairman, now that we have, now that there's an amendment, that looks even worse than why this seems like the appropriate time to talk about it. All I want is some example of something that shows that we can collect money based on how successful the program is. And all I've seen so far is things that we can't do. So,
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kahn, I don't know all the particular options that these vendors utilize. There are a lot of different ways to do success fee contracts. What you don't want to do is give them a percentage of the total taxes assessed. You want to offer them a percentage or some kind of a structure based on the difference between what you would have collected had you not used them and what you do collect based on having used them. And so if you offer it as a percentage of the totals, you've created an over incentive for these organizations, and they're just going to go after the biggest companies with the biggest bottom lines and the biggest tax numbers that year as compared to those where there's the biggest opportunity for returns to the state. And there's a vendor in particular that specializes in this type of award system, and they tend to go out and simply drive formulaic answers to the question of who owes the most tax, and then the company and the state have to go to court to defend how they got it, and it's proprietary, and no one can tell you how they actually came up with their number. The court can't discern it. So we're trying to avoid a very specific instance where the bounty hunting is excessive, doesn't drive to the results that the state wants, and simply lends to complications. I don't know what more I can tell you. I'm trying not to finger a specific vendor or circumstance here.
Representative,
Madam Chairman, what I don't understand now, again, I guess I have trouble kind of understanding something when it's just said and not written down. But what are things you can say if there are hundreds of ways you can do this and we're only prohibiting one? One of the ways you could write this is you can say using methods including but not limited to. So that would list one thing, and that would give everything else as an option. And then I would believe that there's something in here that's pinned on the success. I don't understand. I assume that when we go through this, we don't end up illegally collecting taxes. I assume we only collect taxes that are owed to us. And so what I don't understand is, what difference does it matter how we do it? Because if we're only collecting taxes that are owed to us, if I were going to take someone to court, I would say that I didn't know those taxes, not that I objected to their methods of how they found it.
Representative Downey, you want to try?
Madam Chair, I guess the bill could have been worded differently to say including but not limited. It doesn't. This is a clarification just to make sure we don't present an option or require the Department of Revenue to consider an option that is a problem.
And Representative Kahn, maybe I'll try here a little bit. I'm probably going to get my own self into trouble, but the way I read this is that that you could get into trouble if you were paying based on a percentage of taxes collected, because then they wouldn't put together models that were equal across the whole spectrum of taxpayers. They would put together a model to get taxes from those most likely to be able to pay additional taxes. Huh. I heard Representative Downey say that this would make sure that you would delineate the difference between what the state was collecting under current collection procedure and then under the new analytics, that gap, that you could look at some type of payment based on the gap but not the total amount assessed as is prohibited in the amendment.
Well, I don't understand.
Representative Kahn.
Well, Madam Chairman, Representative Daly, I don't understand then why the amendment doesn't say that and say that you can do that. Plus the fact is, as long as we're collecting taxes that are owed to us, I don't understand what any of the problems are. If the method gets triggers taxes that we aren't owed, then that's really rotten, and they shouldn't do that, and that seems illegal, and it seems that that should be done. But if we're only triggering taxes that we are owed, I don't understand what the different the methods make.
Well, Representative Kahn, they're trying to put forth a contract that would yield a product that would look for additional tax revenues across the spectrum or the range of opportunities to get more revenue, more coming in based on current law. By this amendment, that if you would have a contract that would be payment would be based on the percentage of taxes assessed, they would want to do a model that would go after the big taxpayers. They wouldn't want to do a model that would go after,
and why not,
the average person that may not pay a whole lot of money.
Chair, we're belaboring this point in my mind beyond the point of usefulness, but Representative Kahn, I don't know if you actually read the, well, you probably did because you're on the committee, but the important thing is that in the current language, it restricts any agreement that's contingent on the amount collected. That isn't what we want to do, and so your argument seems to actually argue for this amendment as compared to against it. The only type we are now excluding, and this is the purpose for the clarification of this language, is those kind of contingent arrangements where you're basing the fee as a percentage on the total dollars owed, which in most cases has absolutely nothing to do with whether or not there is a tax gap that is due to be collected there. So I maybe haven't explained it. I've explained it four or five times, so it's probably worse than when I first explained it, but I don't find this that complicated. We're actually narrowing the range of excluded options to a smaller subset that are the real source of the problem.
Representative Kahn.
Well, Madam Chairman, that is a semi-helpful amendment in that it is clear that your amendment goes in the right direction. What I don't understand is why you want to go that way at all. I mean, I believe in committee. I'd have to go back with so many things I object to in committee that it's hard to remember all of them. I'd have to go back. I think what we want to do with these things is we want to collect the most. We only want to collect taxes that are owed to the state and not collected. I don't see why we want to make any constraints on that. And it seems to me if I were running this program, the thing that makes the most sense, no matter what, is to go after the biggest offenders. Why go after Tom Hackbarth's mother or someone who forgot to put the right, took a percentage wrong or something like that, when there's some big company that has hired people that are purposely misdoing the taxes so that they pay less taxes.
Representative, I'm not getting the idea that we're going to satisfy your question this evening. Maybe the author of the bill, Representative Pepin, will be able to provide additional information. I don't know, Representative Downey, if you have nothing else to add. Representative Kahn, I guess this is one that we're not going to get resolved tonight, I don't think. Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I think we finally have gotten to the crux of the issue. I understood not wanting to do taxes assessed. That made total sense to me. But when we're saying not collected, then the outcome here is going to be that lots of people using the modeling, lots of people who owe a little bit of taxes are going to be hit, and some of the biggest offenders, and I use that word advisedly, will probably skate. And that makes me very, very uncomfortable.
Representative Wiggins, I'm not sure that's what I heard, but
that's exactly what's going on.
Representative Slawik.
I actually have a different question, but wanted to put some closure on this. To me, it does make sense. And I just wondered, Representative Downey, did you work with the department on this? I mean, have they been working with you at all?
Again, Representative Slawik, this is Representative Pepin's bill,
right.
I don't know if it's a fair question, but Representative Downey, if you know, was Chair Pepin working with the department with this language?
Madam Chair, we had numerous hearings and presentations from the department, both in committee and then subsequent to the passage of the state government omnibus bill. We've been starting with limited success due to a lack of progress and a lack of opportunity to go much deeper with the Department of Revenue to date. I think that's something that we would definitely want to do. This is just one component that has surfaced, and I thought that passing the bill here tonight, we would want it to be in the form that the state government omnibus bill is in here, you know, 24 or 48 hours from now. So I'm offering the amendment here.
Madam Chair, I actually had a drafting issue on the page 2, line 10, delete everything after the period. Is that correct? You would actually delete the rest of the bill, wouldn't you?
Representative Slawik, you're only deleting everything after the period on line 10. And then if you go down, you see delete lines 11 and 12.
Okay, so it's separate. Okay.
So I think we got it right. but...
Okay, thank you.
Certainly, Ms. Novak, you can correct us if we're wrong.
Okay. That was, on the other issue, depends on how many more stops. Does this bill go right to the floor, Madam Chair?
It does. It has been to, let's see, State Government Finance and Taxes. And Representative Downey said, it was included in the State Government Finance bill as well. Mm-hmm. So it's... Do you have additional questions? Or? All right. Representative Lencheski.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, maybe it's a question for you. I'm just trying to figure out exactly that. Why is House File 174 traveling alone if it's already in Representative Lanning's omnibus bill? Is there going to be an intent to take it out of that conference committee? Or?
Representative Lencheski, it's not unusual that we move sub-bills. We did it the other night with Environment Policy Bill and Representative Ward's bill. So this is just another move here to move this bill separately. It's a little difficult not having the bill author here in front of the committee. I was told to hear it in the committee, and I do what I'm told generally. But don't ask my mother that question. She might not agree. Representative Lencheski.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, I continue to oppose this bill, but I will say that, you know, for Representative Pepin, who's not here, the compliance really should be for everybody, not just the big folks. It should be for everyone, because the reason that you do compliance isn't just to get money. It's to have people believe in the system. And so when groups of people believe they'll never be audited, that lends itself to less compliance. And so when you have auditing, you want to hit all groups, whether you're getting a quarter or a million, because it demonstrates to taxpayers that nobody is above review. So actually, the Office of the Legislative Audit report that asked for more compliance cited it's actually small businesses that are some of the biggest offenders for underreporting income, and they tend to be on the lower end of the spectrum. I know there's a lot of rhetoric here that small businesses are in the high-end tax group, but they're actually not. About, I think, 85% of all small businesses are not in the top tier of taxes, and so that's actually a big group that underreports, and so all groups should be looked at. But I only raise it because I think the intent of the bill has been just to find money, and I think that's unfortunate, because compliance, that's not really even what compliance is about. It's to secure the system and have belief in the system. So I don't think we need people to do this other than the Department of Revenue. We've got all those people there, and they're kind of leading the nation in compliance right now. It's hard to find any state that's doing better than Minnesota, but just curious as to what the strategy was with this. I actually was hoping, Madam Chair, that you would tell us that the beginnings of the 1.2 of money that Dayton would like to see removed is getting removed, but I guess that's not happening, so thank you.
All right, Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What I do like about this is exactly the approach that you can use any way of setting up a contract except this one. And when you have a situation where you're having one you can't do, it is very appropriate to do language in this way, because everything else is good to go. And then I think the everyone also is very important in this regard, that exactly whether it's a small amount or a big amount, that you analyze them in a fair way, and that there are systems out there that can do this and kind of help put the blindfold on, so that you aren't going after anyone in particular. I think to construe this as any sort of way where that is the case, what you want to be sure is that you don't overlook somebody. So I think the approach on this amendment, and Madam Chair, are we on the bill yet, or are we just doing the amendment right now?
Well, we're just on the amendment.
Seems like we're having more discussion on the bill, and maybe we ought to get to doing the amendment, and then we can get on to the bill. Just a thought. Seems like that's the discussion.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of things. Representative Lencheski, if you look on line 2.7, this bill does talk about individuals as well as businesses. And the other point I would make is that in conversations both in public and in private with the Revenue Department, they readily acknowledge that they do not have the tax analytic capability that the current climate really requires. And so they've indicated very clearly to us that they would welcome additional help in doing that kind of work. And the last thing I would say is that I support the amendment, the A3 amendment as it's been modified, and we intend to incorporate that same language in the state government finance bill.
All right. Seeing no further discussion on the A3 amendment, Representative Downey renews his motion that the A3 amendment be adopted as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion passes. The amendment is adopted. All right. We have the bill in the shape that we'd like to discuss it. Representative Carlson.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I'm looking at the fiscal note here, and it basically says that they cannot give us any numbers in terms of what it would cost to collect these taxes or the revenue that would be received. And so my question is, are we booking this, it looks like 90-some million? Where did these numbers come from is the question I have, because, you know, part of the debate during much of the legislative session has centered on fiscal notes or the lack thereof, and how we're using various numbers to balance the budget. So Madam, it looks like this is 90-some million. I don't know if that's a question for you, Madam Chair, or the author, but just how are we booking these numbers?
Madam Chair, if I...
Representative Downey.
I think it might be helpful for me to just give a two-minute synopsis of the bill and the intent and the background behind it before we jump into these questions. As was previously mentioned, this is just about fairly collecting Minnesota's tax gap, and while I agree with Representative Lencheski that we're at the higher end of success on the part of states, we are at about 90% of all taxes collected by various estimates, and I think in the 2011 Department of Revenue report, there's about $1.3 billion opportunity that they identified in the biennium. And so there is definitely an opportunity in what we're doing to get better and get more targeted. I would mention that the governor's proposed budget had $11 million in appropriations recommended and $43 million in projected compliance revenues, and that's pretty consistent with the 4-to-1 kind of return, if you will, on the compliance dollar spent that we've seen historically. Those who follow this stuff know that it was much higher some years ago when we really started putting the effort forward. It's now down to a fairly consistent 4-to-1 ratio in terms of the dollars you get for the dollars spent. But I would mention also, we've spent, I think, $28 million, if you go back to the previous two budgets, on an integrated tax system. And that integrated tax system now has all, or very soon will have, every single tax area that we collect in one integrated IT system. And so now we have an opportunity to leverage that tool that we've got that we invested $28 million in. And to date, every time we've done compliance spending to get that 4-to-1 return, it has been by adding more people to the Department of Revenue. And if you go look at the number of staff in the Department of Revenue that are focused on compliance, it's going up. The curve is very substantial. I think we're well over 1,000 people now in compliance, while in the other areas of support and just regular staff activities, I believe we heard testimony today that they're down to 40% of what their staff was just some years ago. So they've realized great efficiencies in one area, but we still rely largely on just pouring more people into tax compliance. And we heard a lot of testimony from a lot of businesses that felt like they were just getting hassled by new people who would come in, just got training, didn't have great customer service skills. And so the purpose of this proposal is to say, instead of just pouring money into more bodies on the ground, on the street, outrunning the exact same audit routines that we've always done, let's get more sophisticated, let's get more targeted, let's take advantage of this wealth of data that we now have. And there are systems out there, and it's a fairly mature vendor field, that not only look at taxes across all of these different tax types in the integrated tax system, but they'll compare it to what's going on in workers' comp, and they'll compare it to what's going on in unemployment or wherever, and they will build correlations, much more sophisticated modeling that we've never been able to do. And with the appropriation that we've offered, over $30 million, we are assuming that same 4-to-1 collection ratio, but doing it in a different, smarter, more targeted way, so that we don't have the hassle factor on our small businesses. We don't have the hassle factor that we do today on individuals. We're very targeted right on those opportunities that are the richest ones for the state, and in terms of fairness to people, the ones that are going to be the most fair because they are rightfully owing their taxes. So this is an attempt to take advantage of an investment we've already made to bring outside expertise, outside systems to bear in a new and extremely robust way. And I had mentioned the Department of Revenue's presentation to our State Government Finance Committee, and they say regarding the integrated tax system, once fully integrated, Department of Revenue will explore all opportunities to become more efficient in operations and customer service. And so this is saying we're beyond the time of exploring. We've spent $28 million on this IT system. We got all this data sitting out there. Now is the time to start mining it and targeting our tax compliance activities in the most cost-effective way. And so this is a new ground, certainly, for the Department of Revenue, but one that has met with success in other areas, and one that, frankly, the Department of Revenue, I think, has said they welcome. So with that, I'll stand for questions.
Representative Carlson. Yeah.
Then I would ask the question that I was asking earlier. The fiscal note doesn't really tell us anything, and yet in the bill we've built in $11.5 million in 12 and $23.3 million for 13, and they're expecting to get $133 million, which nets at 90 some million. And what I'm asking, I understand the 4-to-1 ratio, but you could pick almost any number and say it's 4-to-1. So who put these numbers together is what I'm asking, being that we don't have a fiscal note. And it goes to the core of the debate, as I said earlier, that we've had much of the session in terms of how numbers are put together and how reliable those numbers are and where they come from. And so that's my question, Representative Downey, of either you as tonight's author or the chair of the committee, or maybe even the chair of taxes, who happens to sit on this committee as well. How do we arrive at the gross number of 133?
Representative Downey.
Madam Chair, the same way that the department arrives at its number, which is the 4-to-1 ratio.
But
Representative Carlos,
Madam Chair, 4-to-1 as it relates to what? I mean, that's the point. You could pick any number and apply the formula 4-to-1.
Madam Chair,
Representative Downey,
4-to-1 ratio is pretty much where the department has been on its tax compliance initiatives. I don't have the chart in front of me, but at least the last 2 or 3 years, and before that, it was actually higher. But as they've kind of depleted their target-rich opportunities, we're now looking at this new mechanism, and the ratio of revenues realized is exactly the same as what the department proposed in its bill.
Well, Representative Carlson, I know that there's ongoing discussions, and I don't know if Chair Lanning wants to weigh in here. But
Madam Chair, I just say we're kind of going in a circle here. I don't think either you're not choosing to or not grasping the question that I'm asking, but you could have picked a number, $400 million, and said it's going to cost $100 million to get it. I'm just asking where these numbers came from. Was it a private business that put them together that we could, with that 4-to-1 ratio, come up with 133? You and I are both on taxes, and this was talked about. So where do these numbers come from, other than the formula of 4-to-1?
Representative Downey, and then Chair Lanning.
Well, I'll defer to Chair Lanning if he wants to jump in.
Chair Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Carlson, what you need to understand here is that in the state government finance bill, we're providing additional revenue of $34 million to try and generate that kind of return. And so we are providing in the bill additional resources to revenue to be able to go out and do that, just as the governor is proposing additional revenue through the hiring of additional auditors to go out and raise revenue as well.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I understood the 34. I referenced those. It's divided over the biennium. But, well, I have some concern about just how optimistic these numbers are. Last biennium, we were working with State Government Finance Committee on what we could use using the same formula, the 4-to-1, and this seems to be particularly optimistic, is my point, and it's not based on really any information from the Department of Revenue, but I'll stop there.
Thank you. Representative Slawik.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Carlson, along those lines, I mean, the fiscal note, what we don't have is the narrative, it is on the back, is that the department estimates that it would only raise an additional $4 to $6 million in revenue. So it's the difference between that $90 million and the $4 to $6 million, which is a big number. And I think that's what we're very much concerned about. The other thing is the governor did, after this bill was heard, at least on the House floor, come out with his own analytics proposal in a number of areas where he is going to be analyzing. And why there is no number on the fiscal note is what I learned is that it's not a zero. It's the department wouldn't book a number because it's an RFP going out there, and they don't like to book it until the RFP comes back in with some kind of number. So that's what the difference between the process that the majority is proposing and that the governor is proposing is he would go out and do the RFPs and get the numbers first. And so I think, you know, we're booking savings, and I, you know, Madam Chair, we've gone back and forth, and Representative Carlson has talked about we're going to certify, I guess, on this on the number, although it's not a omnibus bill, so maybe we don't have to do that with this, but is that over $90 million real? And then the other point I will just make is in the on the House floor, I offered on this and on Health and Human Services the part about who makes the decisions. So if it's not real, money doesn't come in, or, you know, maybe what we should do is offer an amendment. If it doesn't come in, then the governor or the commissioner of management and budget gets to cut and to that amount. Maybe we should have one where they could also tax to that amount. You know, maybe we could have, you know, give them the flexibility to raise revenue. You know, then it's kind of a gamble either way. But it seems like we are booking money that we don't necessarily have, and then we're giving, as we know, the authority not to the legislature but to the commissioner then to cut. We're not sure where. So I don't know. Representative Holberg, are you certifying then? Or does that happen in these as these bills go solo here? Or is that only in the big bills process?
Representative Slawik, it does not happen on the little bills.
On little bills. So it's just taken out of the, I guess you don't have to, it doesn't have to balance, right?
Well, Representative Slawik, this has already been accounted for in a bill that's already left.
Okay.
In its exact language other than the amendment. Was already included in the state government finance bill as it left here, so it's already been accounted.
So we can
in
just
the targets.
Okay. We'll just express our concerns about that, and I think that's been made clear. And as we need fiscal notes to end the session, and we need ones that are really going to be realistic, I think this is an example of one that's a big problem.
Representative Lanning, to this point.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Slawik, I think you're confusing the offset. Potential savings. That's where that 4 to 6 comes. That has nothing to do with the tax analytics. We're talking here. That's a separate issue from this. And if you use a 4-to-1 ratio, the 34 million times 4 is 136 million.
Madam Chair.
Representative Slawik.
I mean, I have $4 to $6 million in my notes here, so for this proposal. So I don't know if either our research was off or, but that's what our understanding was. So that's I'm going based on notes that I do have for the bill.
Madam Chair.
Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I think there's we're bouncing around on a bunch of different numbers. First, if I can, I did actually find the sheet that has the Minnesota State Tax Compliant Initiatives return. In 2002 and 3, it was actually a 10-to-1 return on the compliance dollars spent. Fiscal year 4 and 5, it was 7.5-to-1. 6 and 7, it was 6.4-to-1. 8 and 9, it was 6.1-to-1. And now we've been back down here in 2010 and 11 to a fairly consistent 4-to-1, which is what they were pretty much estimating at the end of our last biennium, too, as we were asking them to do more at the end of the last biennium. And so I think the 4-to-1 ratio is probably is still a pretty safe ratio. It's the one that the department used for its own calculations. We are adding a lot more in terms of resources, suggesting that not only people but technology and outside consultants could help drive that same 4-to-1 ratio. And the $4 to $6 million, I think Representative Salk, is the costs that the department is estimating, not the actual revenue. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And Representative Kahn, I have you, and then I don't have anybody else. And I know some of our members are trying to get to conference committees tonight. This language has been through the committee already.
Well, very simple. Since it's been through, I might as well say the same thing I said the last time it was going through, which is I'm not in opposition to this. We included it in our bill last session, and the Senate wouldn't accept it. What I do object to is that the tying of a specific sum of money. We said we're doing unknown, unproven techniques. We should not put this cut in, which will affect all of the agencies of the of the state, since any attempt to exclude specific agencies was never accepted. And the problem is, too, is that there isn't any discretion. The Commissioner of Revenue shall issue a request for proposals, and there isn't any and because we're assuming the money is coming in, that means that they've got to do it, even if they don't like the proposals that that come in. And the 4-to-1 and the money may very well come out of the hiring of additional people, which we know has been successful. And every time that we upped the amount in the years that I chaired this committee, it was done with negotiations with the Revenue Department, and they agreed on what they were saying, even though they initially said, well, we can't raise this much, and then they would kind of come around and say that they could, and they did. But this is just an entirely new technique of doing this, and is putting this penalty into the bill, whether it's successful or not, as opposed to trying it and taking it. If it's successful, we still have next year to come in and adjust our budget downward or upward or whatever we need to do. So that's my objection. It's not an objection to doing this. Perfectly willing to do it. I just think it's just very inappropriate to assume a success that the department doesn't agree with.
Thank you, Representative Kahn. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'll be just brief. Representative Kahn put it well. That's the point I was trying to make, was the assumption that number, that 133 gross, and then what the net was at 90-some million. But were these numbers then put together, Representative Downey, do you know, by SAS Institute? They're referenced in the fiscal note. And when I was asking you who put the numbers together, did they put together the 133 gross?
Representative Downey, if you know.
Madam Chair, no, not that I know of.
Yeah, I guess that's a question for later then, Madam Chair. I'm just trying to get a handle on who put those numbers together, where they come from, what were the assumptions where they could arrive at $133 million gross. But I'll stop there because I know you want to get to, or some want to get to, conference committee.
Thank you. Thank Representative Lynchewski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Downey, I just have my back to you to use the microphone.
Yeah, so. Sorry.
I'm looking at the House research summary, and the way I read it, $34.8 billion of taxpayer money is going to go to fund this. Where is the clawback in the language that if we're going to use $34-plus billion of taxpayers' money to do this and they fail, how do we get the money back?
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to be clear, it's $34 million, not billion.
I'm sorry, million.
Yeah, sorry, I just cut the whole budget, and I want to make sure people weren't thinking that.
Looking for the clawback.
Might as well be.
Madam Chair and Representative Lynchewski, there isn't a clawback per se, but what we've granted is the flexibility for the department to structure the RFP in a way that it's vendor financed, and I don't know that they would enter into any agreement where the state was carrying the risk here. Almost all of these vendors do it on a success fee basis, which we had quite a bit of discussion about previously.
Representative Lucheski.
Well, Madam Chair, so you're talking about the May language and on 2.9? Because that's just a hope and a prayer, I think. I think that doesn't require anything.
Madam Chair.
Representative Downey.
Yeah, Madam Chair. Yes, Representative Lucheski, that's the portion of the bill. And, you know, with the word may, I guess you don't even necessarily need to put it in there. I think it was an important signpost for the author of the bill to make sure that people understood that there could be a lot of different arrangements that the Department of Revenue could enter into. I think clearly what's contemplated here in this bill is that they would do a vendor-financed option of some kind of success fee basis, but didn't tie the department's hands entirely on that in that regard.
Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, Representative Downey.
Renews my motion to pass House File 174 as amended and have it referred to the General Register.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Motion's amendment. Motion passes. Members, I need a motion to approve the minutes of the May 4th meeting. Representative David moves approval of the minutes from May 4th meeting. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The minutes are approved as distributed.
I like it.
Members, we're looking at a Wednesday evening meeting time. We should have an agenda out early tomorrow. And if there's no other business before the committee, the meeting is adjourned.